In this episode of the Books in Action podcast, I met with Isabel Vary to chat about how she's put book theory in action. I'm your host, Rhiannon Gibbs, and this season I'll be chatting to guests about how they've applied ideas from books to improve personal performance. This podcast is for professionals, leaders, and anyone who wants to continuously improve performance by putting business and self-help books into action. Isabel Vary is the Customer Experience Director at Stonewater Housing, founding member and co-chair of Women in Social Housing East, and chair of the Chartered Institute of Housing East Region. In this episode, we chat about how Isabel has applied key ideas from Kim Scott's book, Radical Candor. Here's our conversation.
Hi, Rhiannon, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. So you've chosen to talk to us about Radical Candor by Kim Scott, which is effectively about building relationships by delivering effective feedback to your colleagues and direct reports. So we've had a little chat, but tell everybody that's listening, why Radical Candor?
Yes, why Radical Candor? It's a book that sets out how feedback is at the heart of people being good at their jobs and looks at the role of what Kim refers to as the boss, for want of muddling up with whether is it a leader, is it a manager, she just gets it, the boss, your role in giving feedback to others in order for people to, well, as she says, do the best work of their lives. And just really reflecting on the role that feedback has. And yeah, like I think you've mentioned, its role in relationships, but actually then it's a virtuous circle between the relationship and the feedback. It's not cause and effect in the sense of one gives the other, it's both directions.
Tell us about your experience of implementing the concept in Radical Candor.
Yes, so her mantra is to be direct with people, to challenge directly, and that is through both praise and criticism. Ultimately, what she is telling you is that if you can see something that is holding someone back or holding a team back, and where their opportunity to do good work or to progress in their career is being held back, it is your job to let them know. And there are things you can do that help that go well, but ultimately you need to let them know, and you need to get over that conversation is hard. And don't trick yourself into thinking you're being nice by not telling them. And she talks about this phrase, ruinous empathy, that you are ruining someone's chances if you don't tell them. You just have to work out how to tell them. And then there's a balance between telling them those things and nitpicking. So she also says you should leave three unimportant things not said every day, or some number of things. So it's not about suddenly picking people up on every single little thing that they do. It is about spotting these things and delivering the feedback to them in a good way. And I previously had a boss who was very conscious, and he did this very consciously. And I really appreciated it because he did do what Kim Scott says, which is he also was showing me he cared. He cared about my career. He cared about how I was doing at work, and cared about the quality of the results of my work as well, and how I was perceived by others. And we'd had a sequence of meetings that had gone well, but not as well as I'd wanted them to, and people's reactions to my work had maybe been not as positive. And he told me that when I'm trying to get something across, I have an impulse, which means I can point. And he said, you don't realize you're doing it, but people see it as a very aggressive move. And you also interrupt too often, which I still do more than I wish I did. But those two really specific bits of information, they did sting at the time, because you're like, oh, okay. However, he also told me all the other things that I was doing that were going well, and how the meetings had got positive outcomes. But those two bits of information really stuck out. And then I read this Radical Candor book, and she has the story. Now, Kim Scott has, at one point in her career, she's at Google, and she works with Sheryl Sandberg, who, after a presentation has not gone well, it went, the presentation goes very well. In fact, I think Kim says she walks out the room, she's expecting a high five. And actually what she gets is a conversation where she is praised about the elements of it that went well. However, there is also this feedback that she says a lot, and that it's going to undermine her credibility. Cheryl forces her to pay attention to the fact that she said it, and then offers this help in terms of voice coaching and things. And I remember my boss saying, sit on your hands. Sit on your hands. This is a very specific bit of advice I can give you. He also went as far to reflect that he has similar tendencies. And I think he said he can occasionally sort of do a yes and sort of use it, create a fist, but in a what he feels like is a positive yes, with a sort of almost fist pump to himself. But again, this perception that other people actually see this as a very aggressive move. So that was really interesting for me. And I have tried to do this with other people where I've noticed that is a verbal tick that's getting in your way, actually, because if you say it very regularly and it's not a useful thing for you to be saying, you need to know you're doing that. And again, it's that thinking, is am I nitpicking or is this valid and they need to hear it? So that's been very interesting for me, thinking about how I give feedback. And also the idea that it is on you to do it. You've got to suck it up and give that feedback and help the other person handle it as well.
That's a brilliant example. I know we've had lean practitioners we've worked with in the past, and one of the exercises we get them to do very early in their lean practitioner days is part of their facilitation training, and it's to deliver a presentation on anything they like. It's not testing their knowledge of lean or agile tools or techniques. It might be their experience of, I've had one where they've talked about, you know, managing the dementia with their parents. They've had one where we've had Lego fanatics. I'm pointing at the background in my office now. And they do a presentation, and it's to identify those verbal tics. And I do remember once a group of practitioners sitting down, and somebody stood up and did their presentation, and they said 50 times in 5 minutes, 50 something times. And they sat down and I said to the group, okay, feedback for this person. And everybody had spotted the erms and had written it down. And they said, you clearly know what you're talking about. Yeah. And you're in a friendly environment, but you're saying this erm. And it's a very hard habit to stop. But by being aware of it, it makes it easier. We were joking before we started the podcast about ums and erms as well.
Yeah.
And one bit of feedback I've been given by my mentor, Bev, in the past is that if I get nervous, I touch my hair a lot when I'm presenting. So if I'm doing, and nobody else can see it because this is an audio podcast, but if I'm touching my hair, I'm probably slightly uncomfortable. But again, a bit like your sit on your hands, if you're pointing, it makes you very, very aware. So without that feedback, you can't do anything about it. But yeah, at the time, I agree.
So the key that Kim talks about for this working over a long time, I've sort of got three different things in my head, but one of them is that the praise is just as important as the criticism. Your praise has to be high quality, and it also has to be specific. So it's not enough to be telling people they're good and then go in with the criticism, because they won't understand what that good means. And seeing that giving people specific praise, it's not just about making them feel okay about the fact that you're about to go in and criticize them. It's about that shaping their work as well. And that praise can be a direct challenge, telling people this was the bit that was good. If they're not really conscious of that was the bit that was good, they just know when I present like this, it seems to go well. They may not have broken it down like that. So praise can be direct and challenging as well as criticism, and thinking about it in that more interesting way. And that's definitely been something I've thought about. I've reflected on my own experiences when I've been told, you're doing well, you're good, and you can feel very frustrated because you're like, but how? what? And how can I improve? Help me improve. And when I remember at university, I got stuck submitting essays that were getting the same mark every time, and thinking, I'm spending so much time writing these essays. I want to be feeling like I'm improving. And actually my lecturers and tutors finding it very hard to pin down what they actually wanted me to do to add on those extra points or whatever. And it's sort of actually going, oh, well, it's the holistic perception of the essay. It's how it feels. And just absolute sort of rage in my head that I can't use that.
Feels a psychology lecturer should have been able to be more specific.
Yes, no, these were psychology lecturers. I was desperate for them to be more specific. And I look back now and I can be specific with my past self. I'm like, your essays were boring. And I can see it. you've overworked them to a point where they're just so, they're dry. And actually, this is how you could have reduced that paragraph by a third of the words and made it a bit more entertaining. Like, I can see now, me now can talk to past me and see the specific advice I needed, but I couldn't see it then. And also praising what was working. And, you know, you've used 100 references, you didn't need to, but these were the 5 references that were really good. So yeah, I've definitely reflected on that, on my own experience of wanting that more specific praise and feedback. And then thinking when I'm talking to other people about how you make the praise high quality, I remember listening to something that's saying, you know, you need to praise people 20 times for every 1 bit of negative feedback. And Kim Scott in Radical Candor says that there should be more praise. There should always be more praise than criticism. It's that praise can't be bland and that praise can't be not useful. And she talks about the idea that you can make the criticism okay by having one thing, the sandwich, 2 bits of good news makes the bad news okay, but it doesn't if the 2 bits of good news are insincere. And we've just been having our sort of appraisals and things at where I work now, Stonewater. I've really tried harder than I think I've ever tried before this year to reflect on giving that specific praise. These are the things that are good. So yes, that's an interesting one, thinking about praise as much as criticism, because we don't often enough. The other area Kim talks a lot about is receiving more than you give. So you should be seeking criticism yourself, listening to it and responding to it. And I've really thought about this and how you can make it work. And one of the things that I've done for me and when I talk to others is trying to get people to be okay and trying to get myself to be okay about the idea of sunk cost. Because actually, to make it okay to receive feedback and to be okay about the idea that as a response to that feedback, what you're going to do is change what you are doing. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you've got less sunk costs, it's easier. Your pride can't get in the way as quickly. So for example, if someone tells you these couple of things about how you're running our team meetings at the moment aren't really working for me because of this, this and this, and you go into, but this is how I've run team meetings for 5 years mode, A, you can probably unconsciously give them the impression that you think it's more a problem with them than you, because when everyone else has been okay with these meetings that I run, and you're also backing yourself into a bit of a corner. And you've attached your personality almost. This is how I run meetings. And you're questioning how I run meetings. And whereas if you're very clear that you're changing things, you're trying different things. Changing things, trying different things has lots of benefits in terms of responding to the different people you're bound to have in your team, not letting people just go into automatic pilot when they're with you. Also, when you need to change things, it's not this big boom moment. Actually, you can just quite subtly keep adjusting what you're doing and responding to that person, because if you're going to ask for feedback or you're going to give people the time to tell you these things, the absolute risk is that you don't then respond to it. And Kim Scott talks about that they will not talk to you. They're not going to share these insights with you again if you don't do anything about it, that you have to show that you are ready to change and that will help you when you are giving them feedback and you're giving people the permission to respond to feedback and improve themselves. And that is about our behaviors and how we're organizing ourselves and how we're doing things. It's not about our personalities, but being okay about sunk cost, being okay about the fact that, well, I have run these meetings for 5 years like this, great that I know I can improve it now, rather than I'm very annoyed that no one told me before or that, or whatever, but yeah.
Definitely acting on feedback is always the hardest. And I, as I said before, I really like the way you brought this round to continuous improvement. If you're always improving what you do, then feedback just becomes part of that cycle, as opposed to, you know, feeling defensive because you never change anything and therefore any change becomes really obvious.
If
your constant is improvement, then this forms a nice part of that. Any final thoughts?
So the other element that does is the thread throughout the book is that all of this is better when you care personally about the people you work with, and that caring personally is something Kim Scott reflects. It is not about being there for the drinks after work or going go-karting on an away day. It's about having sincere conversations that you have put effort into in terms of delivering that high quality praise and criticism and just feedback, and that this is your job, this is you doing your job, and bosses, and you know, when you're working with people, you're not babysitting people's emotions, you're not like, this isn't something to be seen. Caring personally about people, being there for them when they need you to be in terms of their home life or other things that are going on in terms of how they're responding to their work, that is your job. And it's so important. And if people can see that you care personally, which you show through the quality of conversations that you're having with them, then you can create these cultures. And she talks about these kind of microcosms of cultures you can have where teams are thriving in this way. And I really do believe you know, this is a culture you can grow. But it is demonstrating that through caring about people personally. And I've reflected through the pandemic that we're working on video calls, and you think, oh, I'm going to have this less of a relationship with people because we're not there in person and the chemistry. And actually, I have been again and again absolutely outstanding. Blown away by the quality of relationship you can have over video call. It if you're talking regularly and if the quality of what you're saying to each other is high and you're doing that frequently and you're improving each other's work in a very reciprocal way and you're open to feedback, that you can show people you care and you can have very high quality relationships over video call. And I think I've taken reassurance that caring personally isn't threatened by the pandemic and hybrid working.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. A quick example, at Adesi, we normally meet face-to-face every 2 months, and that's not been possible for the last 18 months. But in the last, or 15 months, but in the last 15 months, we've got 3 new team members who do absolutely pivotal business development, you know, roles within the company. And yet, the team has come together in a way I've never seen before. I'd say we've got our best team ever now, and yet we've never met as a group face to face. And for me, that absolutely, you know, backs up your observation about, you know, how you bond. And it's not about drinks and go-karting. We do all that stuff normally.
Yes, yes. that's important. It's important for a different reason. You could be blowing off steam or doing, you know, you're getting something else. It's not that you're not getting something out of those things. That's just not how you build relationships that show you care.
Exactly. Totally agree. That's a really important point and very relevant given the situation we all find ourselves in.
Sharing effective feedback helps to build relationships and personal performance for those people you care about. Thank you so much, Isabel, for joining me on the Books in Action podcast. For our listeners, you can find Kim Scott's book, Radical Candor, from any good book retailer. There's also a TED Talk that acts as a good proxy for the book. We'll put the link in the show notes. To keep up to date with the latest episodes, follow Adesi Consulting on LinkedIn and subscribe to our newsletter. Have you read a book that's inspired you to action? Be a guest on our podcast or share your story with us on LinkedIn. Find all the details in our show notes.